minded Josie going. But more than likely, it would have involved a lot of guilt and a lot of criticism, and Josie just didn't want to deal with it. She was 27 years old. There was something profoundly wrong with sneaking out of the house at her age. Yet, here she was. When Josie finally walked up to Chloe's side, Chloe looked relieved to see her. "Josie, I was about to give up on you." She stepped back. "You look great. Wow." With her gloved hand, Josie touched her cheek self-consciously. "I don't usually wear makeup." "You should. The hair, the makeup, it looks like you." Josie hesitated, then pushed her curly hair behind her ears, feeling better. "So, what do we do?" she asked. "Want to get a beer?" "A beer?" Josie smiled slightly. "Okay." "Why are you smiling?" Chloe asked.
"I know someone who is going to love when I tell her this."
Once they got their cups, Chloe said, "Want to get something to eat?" Josie didn't answer, because that wasn't something she normally admitted in public. But Chloe was already heading to the food booths, so she followed. The area was encompassed in a bubble of warm, fragrant steam from the funnel cake deep fryers. It smelled like sweet vanilla cake batter you licked off a spoon. She never went to the food booths when she was young. She would sit at the judge's table with her father during the bald head contest, then the chauffeur would take her home. Margaret always met her at the door with questions. Did he introduce her to anyone? Did everyone see them together? She was obsessed with Marco showing pride in his only child, even though it was something Margaret herself could not do. Chloe and Josie ate caramel apples and pecan sandies made by tiny old women from madly competitive church groups. Slowly, she began to relax. No one was watching. She was eating in public, and it didn't feel bad. It felt good, in fact. Wonderful. Maybe it was the food itself. Maybe it was the normalcy of it all. As she became more bold in looking around, she saw some people she recognized, but no one seemed to recognize her. Chloe was the exact opposite. People constantly stopped her to talk. There was Brittany, a girl she'd gone to high school with, June, whom she used to babysit, and then a woman named Flippa invited them both to a Tupperware party. Being here felt strangely empowering, like she now had a secret identity, a superpower. She could go out looking like this, and no one knew her as Josie Serini. She was now just Josie, Chloe's friend. She could eat, and no one would say anything about it, look at her like it was wrong. She bought a plume of blue cotton candy before they left the food booths, and she picked at it while they headed down the row of booths occupied by residents of Bald Slope, who had spent all summer making walnut salad bowls and jars of pickled watermelon rind to sell at the festival. Snow flurries began to fall, and they swirled around people's legs like house cats. It was magical, this snow globe world. They were at the end of the craft booths, ready to turn toward the stage, because Chloe wanted to listen to the band, when they suddenly turned at the sound of someone calling Chloe's name. Jake Yardley was standing under the colorful lights strung above the walkway formed by the booths. People were walking around him, giving him curious glances. He was a mesmerizing man, intense and smart, with those strange green eyes all Yardley men had. People used to say that Yardley eyes could see right through you. The Serinis knew the Yardleys socially, both families having money and large real estate holdings in town. But Jake was a few years older than Josie, and he'd gone to boarding schools, and Josie had been homeschooled by a long string of tutors, so they'd rarely crossed paths as children. When they had, at the odd social function or holiday party, Josie had been absolutely fascinated by him, by his eyes, by how polite he was, how quick he was to obey his parents. She'd never seen anything like it. She'd never socialized much with kids her own age, so she'd thought it was perfectly acceptable to pinch him to get his attention, to make him look at her. When he was younger, he would cry. As he got older, he began to look at her with such sincere pity that it made her run away.
"Chloe, please," he called, his voice desperate, a little slurred.
"Crap, I didn't think he'd be here, and I think he's been drinking," Chloe said tightly as she led Josie away, looking over her shoulder as they walked. "Oh, good. At least Adam is with him." Like a hypnotist's command, that made Josie stop and turn, as if not of her own will. Adam was trying to talk to Jake, standing in front of him and pushing him back. Jake gestured in Chloe's direction, and Adam turned his head. He froze, his mouth open as if in mid-sentence. His eyes had fallen on Josie. Did he recognize her? What was that look? Men didn't look at her that way. He'd never looked at her that way. Long looks from head to toe were for women like Della Lee and Chloe, not Josie. She looked down at herself to try to see what he saw. She saw her red sweater, but most of her seemed to be completely obliterated by the huge cloud of cotton candy she was holding. She quickly hid the cotton candy behind her back. But it was too late. Adam had already turned away and was pulling Jake with him. "How long?" Chloe asked. Josie turned to find Chloe looking at her thoughtfully.
"Excuse me?
How long have you been in love with Adam?" She brought the cotton candy from behind her back. "Is it written on my forehead?" Chloe smiled.
"Since the moment I saw him," Josie said quietly.
"I don't think he knows, Josie."
"Oh, I know he doesn't."
Chloe looked again to where Adam and Jake had disappeared, then she locked her arm in Josie's. "Come on." As they made their way to the stage, Josie threw the stupid cotton candy away. What adult eats cotton candy anyway? It was a stupid thing to buy. It was crowded in front of the stage as Josie followed Chloe into the warm and frantic hive of people. It was like nothing she'd ever experienced before, the movement and cohesion. It was like being enveloped by a warm wave of humanity. She felt anxious at first, like she was going to lose Chloe or suffocate. But then she let herself move with the flow, like water. And she loved it. The band's heavy bass boomed so loud she could feel it vibrate from the ground through her boots. For years, Josie would lie in bed and hear the music from the festival, but she never dreamed she'd actually be here like this. About an hour later, Josie suddenly stopped moving with the crowd. She knew he was there before he spoke.
"Chloe?"
Chloe turned her head slightly.
"Adam," she said, looking back at the stage. "I took him home."
Adam leaned forward, talking loudly in order to be heard.
"To my home. He was a little sauced. He's trying to give you space. He really is. He feels horrible about what happened."
"Good." Adam's eyes fell on Josie, curious.
"Well, hello, Josie."
"Hi, Adam." He straightened, and she turned back to the stage, but she was acutely aware of his presence. She knew when he moved slightly, jostled by the crowd. He was now standing behind her, directly behind her. She could feel the hair on her arm stand on end. It was like static. If she leaned back just slightly, she would actually touch him. She closed her eyes, wondering what it would feel like if he actually put his arms around her from behind. She felt an anxious pull, a longing she usually filled with food. She wanted the cotton candy back. She could feel him move a little closer. Was it her imagination, or was he leaning down, his nose close to her hair? She opened her eyes. He was smelling her. Oh, God, she thought. Her life had become so weird since Della Lee had shown up in her closet. Was this really real, or was she making it up? What if she was going crazy? The fear was so real that she turned around quickly just to make sure, and she bumped right into Adam's chest. His hands went out to steady her, and she looked up at him. His blue eyes had seen too much sun. Papery snow flurries were sticking to his curly blonde hair. If his hair got too wet, the curls would tighten. She knew that from years of watching him walk up to her porch in the rain. He always seemed to like when it rained, and out here in the snow he was in his element. She immediately turned back around, and his hands slid off her arms. "I should be going," she leaned over and said to Chloe. Chloe looked from Josie to Adam, then back again.
"Are you okay?"
"Yes, I'm fine. I just have to go."
"Okay. Adam, will you walk Josie to her car?"
"No," Josie said frantically. Then she tried to smile. They were both looking at her like she'd lost her marbles.
"No, I'm fine, really, to walk to my car. Thank you. I'll see you soon."
"Stupid, stupid, stupid," she said to herself as she walked away. Adam and Chloe watched Josie disappear into the crowd.
"You know what that was all about, don't you?" Chloe said.
Adam shook his head. "That's just Josie."
"She's in love with you."
He paused. "Excuse me?"
"Josie Sereny is in love with you," she said in a louder voice, as if he hadn't heard her over the band the first time.
Oh, he'd heard her. He just didn't believe her. "That's ridiculous."
"She told me. She said she's been in love with you since the first day she saw you."
"Open your eyes for once, Adam. That mountain didn't kill your libido. Don't mess this up. Why do men have to mess things up?" Chloe turned and left him there. He watched her go, stunned. He'd always liked the way Josie smelled. He thought about how she was wearing her curly black hair down that night, how she was in that tight sweater he'd seen her in so many times, the red so striking against her pale skin. And he wasn't the only man here who had noticed. And damn if she wasn't wearing makeup. Was it for him? He suddenly felt uneasy, the way he felt about anything that involved chance. Oh, hell. His leg was hurting. It was time to go home. The next morning, Adam got up and went to the kitchen of his small home, which was around the corner from the high school. It had taken him months of searching to find just the right place, with just the right view. He wanted a place that would let him see Bald Slope Mountain, like he had to keep an eye on it. His brother Brett, thankful that Adam had at least stopped risking his life for sport, called him every week and said the same thing. "Why Bald Slope? You always have a place here. Get the hell out of that town and come home." He groggily made coffee, strong, bitter coffee, for a morning like this when his leg burned like a red-hot poker. He'd grown up in the California Sierras. He'd been a competitive skier in high school. He loved the cold, and he especially loved the snow, but he was paying now for standing out in it last night. Enjoying snow was yet another thing the mountain had taken from him. Every day he woke up humbled by that mountain, his aching leg a constant reminder of what you got when you teased fate to the point of payback. That was it for him. No more taking chances. He'd settled down in the place that had broken him. He was safe here. As long as he was here, he was away from all the temptation out there in the world, the cliffs to jump from, the oceans to swim. He knew he couldn't go back to practicing law. His brother was 10 years older than Adam and had an established law firm, so the job was waiting for Adam when he graduated. But he hated it. It had only been a way to make the kind of money he needed to do what he wanted on vacations. Now he didn't know what else to do, so he just stayed still. Nothing could happen to him if he stayed still, right? He turned, startled, when he heard Jake stumble down the hall. It was hard to get used to having someone else in the house. But he liked Jake, ironic considering Jake's profession. It was hard not to like him, and Adam had tried for a while. He didn't want friends. He didn't want any sort of connection after his accident. He just wanted to be alone. But he found that Jake and Chloe actually made staying here bearable. When Jake appeared in the kitchen doorway, Adam said, "You look like hell."
"That's a relief. It's not all in my head. Give it to me straight. How big of an ass did I make of myself last night? You don't remember the motorcycle gang? Doing the striptease in front of them at the bar? The iguana? Good God, man, tell me you remember the iguana." "Funny. You're a funny guy. I remember seeing her. I was following her. Was she running from me?"
"Walking."
"Who was she with?"
Adam turned to get a bottle of Tylenol from the cabinet. "A woman named Josie Serini."
"Oh, yeah. She never said she knew her."
Adam waited, his back to him, for Jake to say more about Josie, but he didn't.
"So I didn't talk to Chloe? I didn't say anything stupid to her?"
"Nope." Adam downed 3 pills and turned back around.
"I need to tell her I'm sorry. I went back to the festival last night. I explained it to her."
"Thanks, man." Adam leaned against the counter.
"I have a question for you, Jake."
"Don't make it a hard one." Jake went to the coffee maker and poured a cup.
"My head might explode."
"Why in the hell did you tell her? It happened 3 months ago. She never even suspected."
"You sound like my father."
Jake took a gulp of the coffee and made a face. He set the cup down and then scratched his palms over the stubble on his cheeks.
"I told her because she never suspected," he finally said. "She trusted me, and I let her down. And I was just walking around like it didn't happen, like I got away with it. Then that morning she looked at me with those eyes and told me that she could never be with another man. She's too good for me."
Adam crossed his arms over his chest.
"Let me get this straight. You told her to punish yourself? Like there was no other way to do that except by hurting her."
"I'm not saying it was the smart thing to do. I love Chloe. I can't believe I did this to her. I wish to God I could take it back. I wish I could take everything back. I wish none of this had ever happened."
Adam shook his head. If it had been up to Adam, he never would have told his brother about his accident. But he'd been touch and go there for a while, and the hospital had contacted Brett, his next of kin. Now he would never live it down. Sometimes you weren't supposed to share pain. Sometimes it was best just to deal with it alone.
"Stupid, man. Stupid. I know."
The mail was heavy Monday. It usually was at the first of the week. It meant Adam was later getting to the Serenis' neighborhood. Until now, he'd never paid much attention to the fact that he saw Josie almost every day, that she always seemed to know when he was coming up her walk. He looked up at the immaculate Victorian as he approached, thinking once again that it stuck out among the other houses like a big blue toe. No curtains moved. What did she do in that house all day? The front door opened as he walked up the steps, and she appeared like a spirit in a black dress. She didn't have on the red sweater. That, at least, was a relief. But the scent of peppermint swirled around her and reached out to him as he got nearer. Damn, she smelled good. She always made him smile and remember things he hadn't thought of in ages. Christmases, hot chocolate with his family, schnapps at lodge bars. He made it to the top step and stopped.
"Hi, Adam," she said as she walked up to him.
"Josie," he said cautiously, handing her the mail.
"Thank you."
"You're welcome."
He wondered if he'd done something to lead her on. A smile could be interpreted the wrong way. His smile faded. Then he didn't know what else to do but turn and walk away. She looked confused as he left. She watched him cross the street before going back into her house. He walked into the Fergusons' yard feeling like a prick. Hell, he didn't want to hurt her, but he didn't want what she wanted, whatever that was. What did she want? Mrs. Ferguson, a stout woman of about 60, was hand-trimming the grass bordering her driveway with a pair of cuticle scissors. She was bundled in a fuzzy wool cardigan buttoned to her neck, and she wore a pair of pink gloves with the fingers cut out. Mrs. Ferguson was a nitpicker. Her husband spent a lot of time at his club, which was really a cigar shop downtown, to get away from her. It had taken Adam nearly a year to get her mail delivery exactly how she liked it. Flats together, folded and secured with a rubber band. Letters always separate. The two things placed in the mailbox, side by side, never stacked. "Hello, Mrs. Ferguson," he said as he opened her box and put the mail in.
"Nice to see you, Adam," she said. "That happens every day, you know."
He stopped and reached into his bag for the mail for the next couple of houses. "I'm sorry, what?" he asked absently.
"Josie, she watches you walk across the street every day."
Adam looked up.
"She's a nice girl."
Mrs. Ferguson lifted herself to her feet with a grunt.
"It's too bad no one sees it."
"What do you mean?"
"You aren't from here. You don't know the reputation Josie earned when she was a child."
"What sort of reputation?"
"That girl was the meanest, rudest, most unhappy child I've ever known. She could pitch the loudest fits when she didn't get what she wanted, so loud I could hear her from inside my house. I think she broke just about everything her mother ever owned, and she threw tantrums in public just as often. Ask anyone if you don't believe me. Every store owner in town has a story and a bill. She used to steal candy. Her father was the only one who could control her, but he was hardly ever around. Her mother had her hands full. That's why Margaret never sent Josie to school. She hired tutors to teach her at home."
"Josie?" Adam said incredulously.
"I know. If I hadn't seen it for myself on many occasions, I'd find it hard to believe, too. She grew up to be so pleasant. But she looks sad, don't you think? She reminds me of Rapunzel, you know, like in the fairy tale. The only time she leaves that house is to take her mother to her few social activities or to run errands for her."
"No," Adam thought, "that's not the only time she leaves." He turned to look at her house, more curious than he wanted to be. Rapunzel had been sneaking out of the castle. Chapter 5 Lemon Drops. After leaving the letters with her mother, Josie hurried up to her bedroom and went to her window. Adam was still in the Ferguson's yard. With a gasp, she took a step back when he suddenly turned to look at her house. Adam was acting strangely, and she had a bad feeling this had something to do with Friday night. They had a system, a routine, every day very much the same. She'd obviously startled him by stepping outside of that. While there was a part of her that relished the thought of Adam seeing her in a different way, she was mostly terrified of losing what she already had with him. She went to her closet and opened the door.
"Don't give me any more advice," she said.
Della Lee was reading through one of the old notebooks from her box. She was still dressed in most, if not all, of her clothing. Her hair was in a bun today, precariously held in place by her tiara. She looked up and said,
"What?" "I said, don't give me any more advice. Stop trying to help me. I don't particularly like the way your plan is working out."
"Why?"
"Because Adam is acting funny," she said. "If you hadn't encouraged me to go out Friday night, I never would have seen him at the festival and freaked him out."
"Did you touch him inappropriately? I never told you to do that."
"Of course I didn't touch him inappropriately."
Della Lee closed the notebook she was reading. Then she scratched her forehead. She was getting a little more pale every day, her skin becoming this glowing sort of white transparency. Maybe she'd gotten sick from swimming in the river at this time of year. Well, it served her right. Who goes swimming in the Green Cove River in November?
"Then how exactly did you freak him out?"
"By showing up outside of this." Josie waved her arm, indicating her room,
in makeup and my hair down. Oh, my God, you mean he found out you're a woman? What if this gets out? What will you do when people start treating you like an adult instead of a 10-year-old?
Josie snorted.
Like that's going to happen.
Right, Della Lee said. You'll actually have to stop acting like a 10-year-old first.
Josie frowned, then reached over to the false wall in the closet and slid it back. She took out a bag of white chocolate and peanut butter popcorn and a packet of Little Debbie Swiss cake rolls. Della Lee leaned away while she did this, then sat back up.
This is what I'm talking about. This closet took a lot of planning. It looks like years went into it. This closet is the fantasy of every shy, chubby kid in America.
Josie went to her desk and sat.
Every shy, chubby kid in America fantasizes about having a middle-aged woman living in her closet? I didn't know that.
I am not middle-aged, Della Lee said.
I'm just saying, if you spent half the time that went into this closet fixing what's outside of it, maybe your mailman wouldn't look at you like an alien every time he sees you in public.
You're pointing things out to me like I don't know what's wrong, Josie said, ripping open the popcorn bag.
I know what's wrong, so stop assuming that I want to change. I'm fine with the way things are.
You're dying with the way things are, Della Lee said harshly,
causing Josie to lower the handful of popcorn she was about to put in her mouth.
You're going to lose yourself in this, Josie. It's going to happen if you don't change. I know. I lost myself trying to find happiness in things that didn't love me back.
Josie hesitated, looking at the popcorn in her hand, before giving in and eating it. It was always easier after that. She chewed and swallowed.
There.
I hate to break this to you, but I don't think you're the best person to be giving advice on relationships, she said, feeling better. I'm not listening to you anymore.
Oh, but I am the best person, she insisted. You have to understand the wrong way to have a relationship to be able to do it right. I'm a bona fide expert in the wrong way.
Josie turned in her seat to face the closet.
Okay, you can give me one last piece of advice. One. Then you give this a rest. Make it good.
One last piece of advice. Oh, the pressure.
Della Lee thought about it a moment. Then she said,
Julian and I met at a bar. I was there with some girls from the Eat and Run. I was sort of seeing someone, one of my customers from the diner, so I wasn't really looking.
No, that's not true. I always looked.
That was wrong thing number one. When I saw Julian, my breath literally left my body. He walked over to me, and I felt like I was going to die, sort of shivery and lightheaded. But when he finally reached me, everything was fine. I let him take my heart before we even left the bar. Wrong thing number two. And Jesus, we had the best sex of my life that night. He moved in 2 days later. Wrong thing number three.
She smiled ruefully.
Julian is in his element in a bar. He moves so slowly you don't realize how good he is. He's like a spider. You don't know you're trapped until it's too late. But that's why we were so good together, or so bad. Julian had never met another spider until he met me.
Josie waited for something more, but Della Lee had that satisfied look of someone who had made her point.
"Let me get this straight," Josie said. "The one thing you want to leave me with, your last significant piece of advice to me is, basically, don't fall in love with Julian."
Della Lee shrugged.
"Well, I wish someone had said it to me."
Chloe remembered the story Jake had told her about his first year away at school when he was a boy. He fell in love with a skinny stray cat that would skulk around the dining hall during meals. Every day, Jake would offer it sausage or egg from breakfast and pepperoni or hamburger from lunch. Every day it ran away from him. But Jake didn't give up. Even when he had the stomach flu, he snuck out of the infirmary to try to feed it. He was not going to let it down. He would watch it from classroom windows. He even made up a poem about it that he sent home to his mother in a letter. 3 months later, the little cat was finally hungry enough to trust him. It never occurred to Jake that the cat wouldn't eventually come to him. Look at what he offered, after all. All weekend, alone in the apartment, Chloe would catch herself almost calling for Jake when something funny was on the television or when she was doing a crossword puzzle and had a question. It finally occurred to her Sunday evening that this was probably what Jake intended. "He knows you want your space," Adam had said. Space enough for her to see how much she needed him. She was that cat, just sitting there getting hungrier and hungrier. She was doing exactly what he wanted her to do, confident that she was going to come to him eventually. Look at what he offered, after all. Chloe knew some people from Jake's office went for after-work drinks at Jiggery's, the pub on the square across from the courthouse. Jake wouldn't be there Monday because it was his dinner night at his parents' house, so she made plans to be at the pub that night. She wanted Jake's co-workers to see her. She wanted it to get back to Jake that she was happily out on her own, thank you very much. And maybe, just maybe, she could get some information from his co-workers. She desperately wanted to know about the woman who had caused all this trouble. "Who was at the office party 3 months ago?" she would say casually. "You know, the Beasley case celebration." After work on Monday, she went home and changed clothes and carefully applied her makeup. She wanted to look good, but she didn't want to look like she was trying too hard. It took a while to find the balance. A few hours later, she walked into Jiggery's, feeling excited and proactive. She stood just inside the door and looked around, and slowly realized she didn't see anyone she knew. She'd spent so much time getting ready that she'd gotten there too late. Her shoulders dropped as she went to the bar and ordered a lemon drop. She was aware of his stare before she was aware of him. It was like feeling rain in the air before it falls. She found him on the other side of the bar staring at her. He was beautiful, like he'd been carefully drawn with a charcoal pencil, every line perfect, every smudge deliberate. She was a little startled when he moved to see that he was real. He picked up his drink and walked toward her. She watched him, feeling breathless, and she wasn't sure why. "I don't want to bother you," he said when he reached her, his voice the melody to all her favorite songs. "And I swear I'm not trying to pick you up, but would you mind if I sit here? I'm meeting some friends, and I can see the door better from this side." She was finally able to take a deep breath. What was the matter with her? Why was she panicking? It wasn't like she'd never been hit on before. She just wished someone Jake knew was here to see it. "Be my guest." He took the stool beside her. "Are you okay?" "I'm fine," she said, because she didn't want to say that she felt like she'd lost her left arm. She didn't want to say she was afraid that she couldn't function on her own. So she stuck with, "I'm fine." That's what she told Hank at the security gate and everyone who called that weekend, and Jake's father, who'd come to see her at the shop today. But he looked so much like Jake, with those strange, lovely, light green eyes, that she had to stand so far away from him she was practically in the storeroom. "Why do you ask?"
"The look on your face, for one. This book, for another." He gestured toward the bar without taking his eyes off her.
She finally looked away from him and found, next to her drink, a book titled A Girl's Guide to Keeping Her Guy. It looked new, as all books that came to her did, but this one was dated. On the cover was a young woman, circa the 1950s, wearing crinoline high heels and a creaseless half apron. She was serving coffee to a young man who was reading a newspaper in a living room by a fire. "Oh, that," she said, as if taking a self-help book to a bar was the sanest thing in the world to do. She quickly turned the book over, hiding its cover.
"Are you worried about keeping your guy?" he asked gently. "If you don't mind my asking."
"It's just crap.
books had gone crazy. That was all there was to it. She wouldn't be admitting this to a perfect stranger if it weren't for them. I found out last week that my boyfriend cheated on me.
Damn, he said. He looked away and lifted his beer mug to his lips. Looks like we're in the same boat. Last week my girlfriend took off without a word.
Damn.
He smiled at that. If you're here, you must not be taking this book too seriously.
If you're here, you must not think your girlfriend is coming back.
Hearts break. There's nothing you can do except wait for them to heal. Alcohol helps. So does talking to someone about it.
That was all the prompting she needed. I want to know who it was, she confided, moving in closer to him. It was almost like a pull, like the way a man might pull a woman into an embrace, but he didn't even have to touch her. I want to know who he slept with. I can't stop thinking about it. All I know is that she was at an office party 3 months ago, and that's when it happened. Some people from his workplace come here. I was going to ask around, but I got here too late.
He was nodding as she spoke, encouraging her. The courthouse crowd?
The DA's office.
How about this? I'll keep my ear to the bar for you. See what I can find out.
His offer startled her, but at the same time she accepted it without question. He made her feel heady, like her thoughts weren't straight, but it was almost a relief. I've never seen you here before.
And I've never seen you. I'm here most weekend nights. I just happened to be here tonight to meet some friends.
His eyes drifted over her shoulder. He grabbed his beer and slid off the stool.
And they just walked in. If you ever want to talk again, you know where to find me.
She turned on her stool as he moved past her. She'd known his hair was pulled back into a tail, but she didn't realize how long it was until he turned his back on her. It was beautiful. She wanted to touch it.
Wait, what's your name?
He smiled at her over his shoulder. He didn't wink. He didn't make it cheesy. Julian.
Jake's cell phone rang just as his mother served cocktails in the living room. It had been a long time since he'd had to have dinner at his parents' house alone. Sitting there without Chloe, he felt like an exposed wound his mother wanted to bandage, but his father kept poking. Jake was the only son of Kyle and Faith Yardley. His mother softened him like clay. She'd fought Jake's father over sending Jake to boarding school, but Kyle Yardley wanted his son to have character and independence, and staying here with a mother who spoiled him mercilessly was not going to achieve that. Kyle Yardley withheld his approval because it was the way generations of green-eyed Yardley men had always shown love for their sons. You can do better. You're capable of more.
Jake, you know I don't like you to answer calls while you're here. We don't get to see you enough as it is, his mother said in a mock scold.
He set his drink down and took his cell out of his pocket.
It might be work.
In fact, he hoped it would be work. His parents knew that he and Chloe were having problems. Jake would feel a hell of a lot better if he didn't have to discuss it with them to the clinking rhythm of silverware on their best china. It would be such a dignified thing, making his heart an acceptable dinner topic by turning it into polite conversation. He took the phone out to the porch. The night was blue-black and brittle, a perfect late fall evening. His mother had already decorated for Thanksgiving with swags of leaves, artful displays of gourds, and a wreath on the door she made every year from the bittersweet growing beside the guest house in back. He flipped open his phone and said, "Hello?
Jake, it's Brandon."
Thank God, it was work. Brandon was a fellow ADA.
"What's up, Bran?"
"I'll get straight to the point," Brandon said, which Jake didn't find alarming. Brandon began every conversation this way. If he was going to lunch, he'd say, "I'll get straight to the point. I'm going to McDonald's." "I went to Jiggery's after work, and then came home and realized I'd left my wallet there. Long story short, I went back and Chloe was there."
Jake
pacing the porch to keep warm, suddenly stopped. Chloe was at Jiggery's? Alone? No, that's just it. She was talking with someone. His name is Julian something. I can't remember his last name. I've seen him in court a few times. Petty stuff, but he's a hitter. I know you and Chloe are having some problems, but I thought you needed to know this.
His body felt coiled, ready to spring. He was not going to let Chloe get hurt again, by anyone. Not that he thought she would actually go off with another man. She said she would die first. She wouldn't really. No, of course not. Chloe wouldn't do that. But God, just the thought of it. He couldn't imagine what she must be going through knowing he'd been with someone else.
Thanks, Bran. I'll go now.
Jake closed his phone and put it back in his jacket pocket. He turned to go inside to get his coat and make his excuses, only to find his father at the front door, leaning in the doorway with his drink in his hand.
Trouble?
Kyle asked, almost leisurely.
I have to go, Dad. I'm sorry. No, you don't. It's work. I heard the whole thing. It's Chloe. I told you this when she kicked you out, son. Give her some space, some time. You're not doing yourself any favors by having people keep tabs on her, then showing up wherever she is. You shouldn't have told her in the first place.
Though everyone in the DA's office that night had agreed not to say anything, because it would jeopardize all the work that had gone into winning the Beasley murder case, word had somehow leaked out to the courthouse about Jake the Wonder Boy's indiscretion with an unnamed woman. It had eventually reached his father, who just happened to be the mayor of Bald Slope. Kyle had managed to stop the rumor like a tourniquet, not letting it bleed outside the building. But even he didn't know whom Jake had slept with. That at least stayed in the office, though it killed Kyle not to know, and Jake wasn't telling.
"I'm not trying to keep tabs on her," Jake said. "I went to see Chloe today, at her shop."
Jake's hands fisted at his sides. His father told him not to see Chloe, yet he went to see her himself. "I appreciate that you're concerned, but I can handle this on my own." "No, you can't. She could barely stand to have me near her. The balance of power was never equal between the two of you. You stand back. You let her realize that she needs you. If you push too hard, she's going to walk. And don't think I'm saying this for your benefit. It's her I'm worried about. Chloe is good for you. I want her in this family. You messed up once. Don't do it again. Because if you do it again, you'll lose her for good and she'll be left with nothing and nowhere to go. Do you want that?"
"Of course not."
Kyle pushed himself away from the doorway.
"Then come inside and compliment your mother on her dress and assure her that everything is going to be all right."
"I don't suppose you ever did anything like this," Jake said as he watched his father disappear inside.
"If I did, you can be damn sure I never told your mother about it,"
Kyle called out into the darkness. Tuesday afternoon, after a long day of nothing new, of trying not to watch for Jake or think of the mystery that was Julian, of pushing a slightly scorched finding forgiveness off the counter for the 82nd time, Chloe was about to clean the grill and reluctantly go home. But then she saw Josie walk across the rotunda toward her, and her day suddenly got a little brighter.
"Josie," she said, "I'm so glad you came by. You rushed away so quickly at the festival. I didn't have any way to contact you to find out if you were all right."
"I know. I came by to tell you I'm sorry," Josie said as she approached the counter. "I'm just a little 10 years old sometimes." She made a face as if it pained her to say that.
"I have a cell phone. I'll start checking messages if you want to call me. Do you have something to write on? I'll give you the number."
Chloe took one of her business cards from the little stand by the register and handed it and a pen to her. Josie turned the business card over and wrote a number on the blank side.
"So what can I get you today?" Chloe asked. "Grilled tomato and cheese?"
"No, thanks," Josie said, capping the pen and putting it beside the card after she'd finished writing.
"Oh, come on," Chloe said. "I make a great fried egg sandwich. Want to try it?"
Chloe stared at her with an encouraging smile until Josie finally laughed and nodded.
"Okay."
"Great."
Chloe put on a pair of disposable gloves. Then she took butter and two eggs from the under-the-counter fridge.
"Go ahead and take a business card. You can call me here if you want, and the bottom number is my cell."
She plopped a pat of butter onto the grill. When the butter melted, she cracked the eggs into it, close enough for their whites to merge. While they sizzled, she buttered two slices of sourdough bread and put them on the grill.
"I didn't know this place was called Red's," Josie said, reading the card.
Chloe smiled when she thought of her great-grandfather. "Another family tradition. My great-grandfather had red hair. So did my mother." Chloe sprinkled the eggs with salt and pepper and a pinch of dill, then turned them over with her spatula. She flipped the quickly toasting bread, too. She'd spent her childhood watching her great-grandfather do this, and here at the shop was the only time she felt him near anymore.
"Do you want this for here or to go?"
"To go." Chloe sprinkled a little more salt and pepper on the eggs, made sure the yolks had firmed ever so slightly, then topped them with cheese. She let the cheese melt before scooping the eggs up and putting them on the buttered sourdough. She wrapped the sandwich and bagged it, then turned around to Josie.
"On the house," she said, waving away Josie's attempt to pay her. "Why don't you stick around for a minute while I clean up? We can leave together."
Josie leaned against the counter as Chloe turned around to scrape the grill.
"I see you fished the book out of the trash," Josie said.
Chloe looked over her shoulder. Finding Forgiveness was back on the counter, close to Josie. Josie was stroking the cover, making sympathetic noises when she noticed the scorched places from where it had appeared on the grill in front of Chloe that morning. Chloe could almost hear it purr from the attention. Shameless book.
Yeah.
"Where do you get your books? The library? The bookstore?"
Chloe hesitated. She finished with the grill, then wiped down the counters. She'd always wanted to reveal her relationship with books, about how they came to her. She wanted to be told it was all right, that strange things happened to other people, too. But she could never bring herself to do it. The fear that she alone was odd, that no one would understand, was too strong.
"I collect them," she finally said, going to the sink. "I have hundreds of boxes of them in storage."
"Wow.
Do you read a lot?"
Chloe shut the water off after washing a few things.
"I have favorites I read over and over. Every once in a while I'll pick one up at the grocery store."
"You can borrow any of mine," she said, wiping her hands. "In fact, let's go to the storage rental now."
Josie looked surprised.
"Now?
I just need to cash out, then I'm finished here. Do you mind?"
"No," Josie said. "But you don't have to do this just for me."
"It's for me, too. I haven't been to the storage rental in a while. I have some of my great-grandparents' things there. Maybe it's time I decorate the apartment with some of my stuff."
Chloe cashed out and put the money bag in the safe in the back room. After she locked the security gate, they walked outside. The days were getting shorter, and the sun was already low in the sky.
"I walked to work today. My apartment is about 2 blocks away if you want to take my car."
"That's okay. I'm parked right there."
Josie pointed to the far corner of the park, where there were 2 spaces, one occupied by a blue Land Rover and the other by a sparkling metallic gold Cadillac that looked like a large Las Vegas dancer. They walked down the steps and crossed the park. Chloe stopped at the SUV, but Josie continued on to the enormous gold Cadillac.
"Oh, I thought..."
Chloe shook her head and walked ahead.
"Well, this is a nice car."
Josie laughed as she electronically unlocked the doors with the device on her keychain.
"It's on loan from Elvis."
When they got in, Chloe told her the name of the storage rental. Josie knew where it was and headed toward the highway. For the first few minutes, Chloe surreptitiously looked around the car. Cars were very personal, and they usually said a lot about their drivers. This car was a couple of years old, but it still smelled new. Everything inside was very neat, very clean, and she was afraid to touch anything. There was nothing personal or even the slightest bit messy about it. It wasn't Josie at all. When she finally looked up from her perusal and saw where they were, she suddenly said, "Oh, wait! Stop right here!" Josie came to a sudden stop in the street. "What? What's wrong?" She had cut through a neighborhood just south of downtown. They were on a street called Summertime Road, so named because it was the route the old summertime residents used to take when they first entered the town for their summer stays. The bald slope natives always watched this road, waiting for them. Little kids perched in trees to better see the caravan of carriages, then later automobiles. Small, boxy houses lined the street, looking like old wooden children's blocks left outside, light pink and yellow and green. "Right here," Chloe said. "This house. What do you think of it?" Josie looked at Chloe curiously, then leaned forward and stared at the buttercup yellow house with white trim. There was a realtor sign in the neat front yard. "Same owners for over 30 years. A neighborhood that's being revitalized. Lots of young families moving in." Josie sat back in her seat, shaking her head. "But they're asking entirely too much for it. It's been on the market for over a year, and they haven't budged on the price. They're too emotionally attached." Chloe laughed. "How do you know all that?" "It was brought to us as an investment opportunity. We were interested, but not at that price."
"Oh." Chloe turned back to the house. Money had never meant a great deal to her, but at that moment she envied Josie's wealth. Josie didn't want to buy the house, but she could. "They've had a couple of open houses over the past year. It has the most wonderful library to the right, just off the entrance, that window there. See? In a small house, you don't expect something like that. When I first walked in and saw it, I remember thinking, 'This is it.'" Chloe sighed. "I love this house. I pass by it all the time. Even if where I'm going is in the other direction. Jake thinks it's funny."
"He doesn't like it?"
"He likes it.
He likes it because I like it.
But at the price they're asking, we'd never be able to afford it without asking Jake's parents for money. Jake has big issues with that. They gave him the apartment we live in, and he feels awkward enough about that as it is."
"So you don't own the apartment together?"
"No, just him."
Josie looked worried. "Is he going to give it to you? I mean, if the two of you don't get back together?"
"I don't know." The car was quiet for a moment. Life without Jake. She felt panic ballooning in her stomach, but she feigned a smile. She was not going to have an anxiety attack in front of Josie.
"That's it. I just wanted to show it to you."
"It's a beautiful house," Josie said. As they drove away, Chloe couldn't help but look behind her, watching it disappear.
"Yes, it is."
The sun had almost set by the time they reached the storage rental place, a large, sprawling maze of low-slung buildings on an inky black tarmac. The security lights lit up the area like noon. The rent she shelled out for this place would pay for a small apartment. Each rental was temperature-controlled,